It is good to see you all here today. It is Labor Day weekend, and about 50 of our members are camping at Caesars Creek this morning. I don't know if they are joining us online, but if that group is joining us online, good morning. We hope y'all are having a good time camping. We miss you. And I know there are others joining us online as well as a lot of our folks are traveling. But we do have some guests with us this morning. Perry and Taylor are here. Perry, former member here, is getting married on the 11th of December. Perry and Taylor, we congratulate you on that. And I plan on being there since I'm officiating. But we are tickled for you. They are in Atlanta. He is in Atlanta still right now. Don't know what your future plans are, but whatever they are, anytime y'all want to visit, you're always welcome. And it's always good to see former members here. We are a church that's just trying to do the Lord's will. We understand that we have feet of clay and that we are not perfect, but God calls us to a high standard. And if you were going to define our mission as a church, our mission statement is that we want to love God more and more and show that love to others. We want to grow deeper in our relationship with Jesus and grow deeper in our relationship with others. And we also want to share Jesus with others by the way we serve them, by the way we share, by sharing the gospel. That's what we're about. So if you are a Northeast member and someone asks you, what are y'all about at Northeast, you can tell them those three things, among other things. These are our priorities. This is what we are trying to do. This is how we're trying to live. And we're thankful that God gives us the opportunity to do that. I want to begin this morning by doing a little exercise with you. That's a picture. I'm not going to tell you what it's a picture of, but I'm going to ask you to take a good look at that and tell me what you see. All right, does anybody out there in our assembly this morning want to tell me what you see up there on that screen?
A bat.
A bat, okay, a bat. Does anybody see anything different?
A
creepy thing or a creeping thing? Okay. All right. One of the creeping things. All right. What else? Huh? Moth. A moth or butterfly. The vast majority of people in this Rorschach ink blot test, and he's the one that developed that in the 30s, and it's still being used today. 10 standard ink blots that you look at them and you say what you see, and they can, to a certain degree, tell where you're coming from in terms of what you project to images that you see. Just for your edification, some people think that this looks like a fan dancer. You know those ones that have those big fans? What do you think? Do you see that? How about an alligator head? Does anybody see an alligator head up there? All right, what about lungs and a chest? I would say if that's what your lungs look like, you need to go to a doctor really fast. Pliers, I guess the pliers are right here. Yeah, that's part of the alligator head. And then black clouds. And there are actually some people, as they look at that, the first thing that comes to their head is they say, that is a smashed body. All right, so if you saw that, I need to see you after worship this morning, and we need to get you some help really fast. I guess that could be a smashed bat. But anyway, but we all see things differently. It all depends on how you look at things. The perception is sometimes reality, sometimes it's not. Take a look at this real quick. All right, I'm going to ask a couple of you. What's the first thing you saw when you looked at this picture? Brian, I'm going to start with you. A man in a hat with binoculars. Okay, did anybody see anything else first before that? What'd you see, Paul? Okay, you saw the car. Okay, did anybody else see anything else? First glance, first impression. What jumped out at you? Okay, nobody saw the A first? The letter A first? It's there. There's the letter A. And the interesting thing about this picture is that if you see a man holding glasses, wearing a hat, and that's his nose and mouth. The majority of people see that, and those are people who tend to be a little bit more analytical. They tend to see like the whole big picture versus looking at things kind of in detail and analytically. That person, they say, from personality profiles might tend to not pay attention to details that they need to pay attention to. If the first thing you saw is a car, they will say that you are a person who likes your freedom, you like to go on vacations, sometimes you tend to be kind of spontaneous. Does that describe you, Paul, in any way? No? Okay. All right. Well, I want to make a point with that. A lot of these things are purely subjective. And while they can give an indication about where you're coming from or how you think about things, we all see things differently, and we don't always see them the same. I think about Jesus. I think about what he did, how he came, how he lived, what the expectations were for Jesus, how people responded to him, and everybody had a view or a picture or a perception of how they thought Jesus should be or what he should do. And there were times when he was criticized for not doing what certain people thought he should be doing. The fact is that Jesus, the Son of God, God in the flesh, come to this earth, you could definitely expect that when he came and brought the way of life that he did, that it wouldn't just be ordinary like it was all the time, that he would come and bring something truly unique. He came to bring a truly new way, totally different. Jesus said when he was asked about fasting, why don't your disciples fast? And he says, look, the time is not right now for my disciples to fast. Even though John's disciples are fasting, that's your expectation of me. That's how you see me. But this is how I see it, Jesus said. He said, the bridegroom is here, and the wedding has come, and I have made my entrance into the world to bring about life to people, and it's a time to celebrate. It's not a time on this occasion to mourn. So they were not fasting, but they were asking Jesus about it, and he said, look, you can't, don't try to squeeze me or who you think I am or how you think life should be into a mold. It's the wrong thing to do. Jesus, on so many levels, was telling them, you can't anymore kind of push what you want out of me into my life and have it bring what needs to come from that any more than you put new wine in old wineskins, and you know what happens there. You put the new wine in the old wineskins, the wineskins burst, and then you don't get the result that you want. Jesus is saying to them, I'm new wine. I'm the new way. Don't think for a minute that I have just come to give you a spruced up version of Judaism, or I am some prophet just like the other prophets. Jesus said, I'm different. And he proved it on many, many occasions that life in him and following him, we have to look at it kind of in the upside down, because Jesus brought a concept of life and the kingdom and what we should expect out of life and how we should serve him in an upside down way. Now, if you look at this, you see upside. Now you can see down if you look at it like this. See that bottom word down there, in case you didn't see it. I got dizzy. That says down, but it's backwards and upside down. Jesus, do you think about the things Jesus said on certain occasions that was upside down, was contrary or different from what people thought it should be? Read the Sermon on the Mount. Look at what Jesus said about being poor in spirit, or being meek or gentle, or suffering persecution, or loving your enemies. All of that was an upside down way of thinking about life, about what it meant to follow him. In fact, we've talked about James and John just the last couple of weeks, and we saw from them that Jesus on one occasion said to them, look, you want to be great, you want to be the last. You want to be first, then you need to be last. You want to be great, you want to make yourself a slave or a servant to others in the way you treat them. That was a completely upside down way of looking at life the way many people looked at it. And so another one of the things that Jesus said on one occasion that was completely upside down in the minds of a lot of people is this concept that you can have life through death. How many times did Jesus talk about life and death? Talked about it a lot. Talked about his own death, and he talked about what it means to follow him and how we die to self. So when he said to them all, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me. For whoever will save his life will lose it, and whoever loses their life for me will save it. So there, Jesus introduces this concept of life through death. He talks about it in himself. Jesus says that unless a kernel of grain falls to the ground and dies, it won't grow and produce fruit. And Jesus on that occasion used it to refer to himself, the fact that he was going to die and that he was going to be lifted up and that he would draw all men to him that way. But that was through his death. Jesus is the Son of Man, came not to be served, but to do what? Serve and to do what? To give his life as a ransom for many. But once again, let's get back to this whole idea of looking at things a certain way. Sometimes we look at things and we see things all wrong. We think we're seeing something when we're really not. Okay, I want you to look at this figure right up here. And I want you to tell me, I want you to look at it, and I want you to kind of move your eyes between those dots in the middle of those circles. And I'm going to see if this works up here. Oh yeah, it does work up here. Are those little circles moving or not? Are they still or are they moving? Somebody answer, still or moving? Moving? Anybody say they're still? Huh? All right. They are still. They're not moving. That is a still picture. And the crazy thing is, with a lot of these optical illusions like this, you look at them, and your mind, the way it works, and the way your eyes work with the drawing and past experience and all the stuff I can't fully explain to you, it's an optical illusion. It is not moving, but it looks like it's moving. And once again, just going back to that idea that things are not always what they seem. They aren't. You look at them one way and you think something, and it's sometimes the complete opposite. I want to give you a definition here, kind of what we're talking about this morning, and that's the word paradox. And a paradox is a seemingly absurd or self-contradictory statement or a proposition that when investigated or explained may prove to be well-founded or true. And looking at Jesus in this kind of upside-down way, I think a lot of what Jesus taught and what the disciples taught was a lot of times it's self-contradictory. It's a paradox. But when you look at it deeper, it's not. It may be proven to be true. It may be well-founded, but maybe we're not seeing it. Now, Paul, as he writes 2 Corinthians, and this is from our reading this morning, one of the things that Paul was doing as he wrote the Corinthians, and he wrote not just these two letters, actually parts of 2 Corinthians is probably part of another letter he wrote, and he wrote at least another letter. But a lot of times when he was dealing with the Corinthians, he was dealing with people who were looking at him the wrong way. They were viewing him in a certain way, which wasn't right, and it was based on sometimes their prejudice, sometimes their selfishness, and sometimes they just were being difficult. And one of those things was to challenge Paul's legitimate apostleship. There were some, I mean, think about it. There were some who were saying that you're not legit. You're not a legit apostle. You're a Johnny come lately. And besides that, you've been here before. Many of us feel that you're not very impressive. On one occasion in the Corinthian correspondence, Paul says, them talking about him, that his appearance is not impressive, and he speaks with contempt. In other words, he's not very polished, he's not very good, and he certainly came along later than the other apostles, so he's not legit. And on top of that, he writes really tough letters. He can be really tough, but when he's in person, he's like a little kitty cat. He's not very tough, and he's unreliable. He doesn't keep his word. He says he's planning on visiting us, and yet he hasn't shown up yet. What's with that? And so Paul was getting all this criticism from a group of people, not all the Corinthians, but it was important because Paul knew what was at stake if the church there at Corinth is pulled away into this way of thinking that says what he's taught, what he's done, what he has shared with them in Jesus is not legitimate. And if that's not legitimate, then Paul is not legitimate. And if what Paul says about Jesus isn't legitimate, then what are they going to do? I mean, you have to look not only at the message, but you have to look at the man. And they were discrediting Paul. And so he basically, at this point, he's pushed, I think he would say himself, that he's being pushed into a corner, and he is defending himself, although he doesn't really love doing it. Paul talks about himself quite a bit, in 1 and 2 Corinthians especially. It's very personal correspondence, but it's because a lot was at stake. And he's thinking about them when he's talking about himself. That's so very clear. This is not just a matter of Paul having his feelings hurt and pouting and wanting to get back at somebody for saying these negative things about him. Because if he's not legit, his message isn't legit, and what does that have to say about their faith? And what does that have to say about other people who might be coming to this church and saying things to these Christians? And they're already vulnerable anyway. They're very vulnerable. And so Paul feels like it's very, very important for him to share this with them for their good. It's not a case of it's all about me. Paul talking about himself, he hated to do it. In fact, if you just turn a couple of chapters in the book of 2 Corinthians, when he's talking about his suffering, he says he's giving this defense, and he's talking about what he's been through, and he talks about he's the Jew of Jews, and he's a Hebrew of Hebrews, and he says, I feel like I hate to be doing this, but I'm going to go ahead and share it. Because they were calling themselves super leaders and super apostles, and God is for us some of these false teachers. And so he goes on to say, he says, I've worked much harder. I've been in prison more frequently. I've been flogged more severely, been exposed to death again and again. 5 times I received from the Jews 40 lashes minus one. 5 times 39 lashes, beaten with rods. 3 times. Once I was stoned, 3 times I was shipwrecked, I spent a night and a day in the open sea, I've been constantly on the move, I've been in danger in rivers, from bandits, from in the city, in the country, in danger at sea, in danger from false brothers, I've labored and toiled and have often gone without sleep, I've known hunger and thirst, and I've gone without food, I've been cold, and I've been naked. That's some list, isn't it? That's probably not even an exhaustive list. And he says, besides everything else, the care, the pressure of my concern for all the churches. And so Paul is saying to them, I am sharing this with you about me because I want you to see things as they really are. And one of the things that he makes clear to them is this whole concept of what does trouble and hardship mean. Now, getting back to the verse there in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, he says, in great endurance, in trouble, hardship, distresses, beatings, imprisonments, riots, hard work, sleepless nights, and hunger. What does trouble like that mean? What happens if you face trouble and hardship in your life? What about Paul? What did it say about Paul? Well, I'll tell you what some people were saying about Paul. If you read other places in Corinthians, folks were looking at Paul and saying, Paul, your life is a mess. It's a mess. And everywhere you go, you get in trouble. Sometimes you run out of town. You've been beaten. You've received 39 lashes 5 times. You've been lost at sea, shipwrecked, not just once, but 3 times. And you look at somebody like that, and back in this day, what's the temptation from them in looking at Paul going through all this? What are some people thinking? What are some people thinking? It's karma, man. You deserve it. It's judgment. No, nobody goes through all these kinds of things, or if you're not pleasing God, at least, and maybe somebody says, well, I don't believe in God. Well, you're going through all of this. It can't be good anyway. But they were saying to him, some of them were saying, look at what you're going through. There's no way that God is being faithful to you, and you must not be being faithful to him, because look what happens to you everywhere you go. It's trouble, it's difficulty, it's persecution. What does trouble and hardship mean? Well, it doesn't mean that you're necessarily not pleasing God. And it doesn't mean that you're necessarily being punished for doing something bad. Now, sometimes it can mean God is allowing something to happen in your life, a difficult circumstance, Paul's thorn in the flesh that was never removed, and God is saying, I'm allowing this in your life, not because I'm not happy with you, not pleased with you, but I'm allowing it in your life to make you stronger, to help you grow, to help you help other people in the future, and to bless others in all of these things. It doesn't mean what you might think it means. And it also means this: don't quit. Don't quit. Notice in this list, in 2 Corinthians 6, he says, when he's talking about these difficult situations, he says, in great endurance. In great endurance. I am enduring this because it is worth it. And I am not only enduring this, I am committing myself, my life, to this because this is what I truly believe. You know, how does a marriage last 50 or 60 years? How does that happen? Does it happen by accident? No, it doesn't happen by accident. It happens with commitment. It happens with a don't quit attitude. I like the story of a couple that they were had just celebrated their 60th anniversary, and they had an event for them, and there was someone there from the small town, the local community newspaper, interviewing them. And the interviewer from the newspaper asked them, what's the secret to you being married 60 years? To which the husband said, well, the one key about being married 60 years is perseverance. I've had to learn about perseverance. We both had to learn about what it means to persevere. He says, as a matter of fact, on our honeymoon, when we first got married, we went to the Grand Canyon. We decided to rent some of those mules and go down that path down the Grand Canyon. And so my new bride and I were doing that, and after we got down a certain distance, one of the mule that my wife was on threw her off of the mule. And she got up and she looked at that mule and said, that's one. And then got back on the mule. And they went a little farther and the mule kicked her off again. She's on the ground. She gets up, looks at the mule and says, that's two. She got back up on the mule and they're going along and the mule throws her again. And finally she looks at that mule and gets out her gun and says, that's three. Boom! Shoots a mule. And the reporter's kind of wondering, where is this guy off on a tangent somewhere? Why is he sharing this story? He says, what does that have to do about perseverance in marriage. And then the man said, well, when she did that, I said to her, that's no way to treat a mule. To which she said to me, that's one. Did y'all know that was coming? Persevere. Don't quit. And we help other people who have gone through the same thing as well. It's so easy to give up. It can be so easy to quit. And Paul's going through all this and he's saying, I'm not a quitter. I'm not a quitter. I persevere. Let me do a quiz for you. I want to do this quiz for you. Who am I? When I was 7, I was forced out of my home on a legal technicality and had to work to help support my family. At age 9, his mother died. At age 22, he lost his job as a store clerk. At 23, he went into debt to start a small store. At 26, his partner died, leaving him huge debt that took years to repay. At 28, after courting a girl 4 years, he asked her to marry him. She said no. At 37, on his third try, he was elected to Congress, but 2 years later, he failed to be reelected. At 41, his 4-year-old son died. At 45, he ran for the Senate and lost. At 47, he failed as vice presidential candidate. At 49, he ran for the Senate again and lost. At 51, he was elected president of the United States. Well, I guess some people just get all the breaks, don't they? Who was that? Abe Lincoln. And history is filled with people who persevered and didn't quit and helped others do the same thing because they believed that what they were doing was making a difference. And Paul could say this because he truly believed that there was power in human weakness. Because as he goes on here in this passage in 2 Corinthians 6, look at what he says. He says, we endure and we live this way and we commit and we don't quit and we do it by the power of God. In purity, understanding, patience, kindness, and the Holy Spirit, sincere love and truthful speech, in the power of God. With weapons of righteousness in the right hand and on the left. Listen, Paul says, even in weakness and even in loss and even looking at facing death at times, he says, when I am weak on another occasion, he says, I'm strong. When you're weak and you feel powerless and you feel like maybe you can't get it done, I tell you what, you are right where God needs you. You are. There's absolutely nothing wrong with admitting our weakness and our need before God, who is perfect and holy. And he's there to provide it. And the fact is, Paul, the apostle, who was able to perform miracles and do great things for the cause of Jesus, as he's talking about the glory of God, and he's talking about the power of God, and he's talking about the way God works, the greatest glory and power sometimes is demonstrated not in spectacular things that you do and not by overcoming every obstacle, but sometimes we live in the power of God and to His glory when we acknowledge our weakness and live with the situation and endure through that situation. That's the power of God at work. That's so, so important to understand that. And then finally in this passage in 2 Corinthians 6, when Paul talks about, just a little bit past the reading from this morning, this is what Paul says. Let's read it together. He says, through glory and dishonor, through bad report and good report, genuine yet regarded as imposters, known yet regarded as unknown, dying and yet we live on, beaten and yet not killed, sorrowful, yet always rejoicing, poor, yet making many rich, having nothing, and yet possessing everything. You see, we live in the upside down. And I admit that sometimes it can be kind of complicated. I admit that. You know, sometimes we have theologies in our minds about how things should be and what should happen to us and what shouldn't happen to us or others. And sometimes that really throws us for a loop because of this. Right now, we're living in the upside down. And so right now, we have to live with ambiguity. And we have to live with not understanding or knowing everything or necessarily having all the answers, but at the same time, knowing that there is an answer and there is a God behind it who can help me live with this paradox in my life. So how you doing? Someone asks you, how you doing? What do you say? How you doing, Dave? Okay, you're blessed. What else? Are you fine? Thankful? Fine? Sometimes it's a mixed bag, though, isn't it? You tell somebody I'm fine, and if they're really wanting to know, for a lot of us, it's not all fine, is it? It's up and down, it's struggle, it's dishonor, it's bad report, it's being beaten. Sometimes we feel like we're being beat up, but Paul is saying here, we live with this complication, with this upside down sort of viewing things like this or that. It almost seems contradictory, but it's not. It's not. And so in this little snippet, he says, dying, yet we live on. Dying, yet we live on. And that brings us back to how we started this. When we're talking about Jesus and the upside down way of Jesus and how he taught people and what he said, Jesus said life through death. Jesus said the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others and give his life as a ransom for many. If you want to come after me, you take up your cross, a sign of death, daily, and follow me. You want to save your life? You lose it for me and in me. So I guess the greatest contrast, the greatest upside down that we could probably look at in terms of our relationship with Jesus is this idea of life through death. And the fact is, life through death, yes. Paul says in Romans 6, he says, shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? Absolutely not. How shall we who have died to sin still live in it? Don't you know that those of us who have been baptized into Jesus Christ have been baptized into his, somebody say it, death. That as Christ was raised from the dead through the glory of the Father, so we too might walk in what? Newness of what? Life. Life and death. And Paul goes on to say, we should no longer be slaves of sin because anyone who has died has been freed from sin. Now, if we died with Christ, we believe that we will also live with him. Look at Romans 6 this week. Death, life, death, life, death, life. You can be alive right now and you can be spiritually dead. And you know you need something different. And you know that you need something upside down different in your life. There are others of you. Maybe you've been there at one time, but maybe you're just drifting away. You're getting away from the life in Christ. Listen, Jesus came to give us abundant life. And if you're not experiencing abundant life, even with all those contradictions, what do you need to do? Maybe, I think about some people here who may need to take that step and die with Christ. Die with Christ in baptism. So we want you to know, however you need to respond to him, however you want to help others through that journey, make a commitment to do that. We want you to know we are here for you and want you to know that yes, life living comes through truly dying with Jesus. Let's sing.